anybody. It's off on Friday. If not, you can watch it on reruns, of course. NASA will put that on probably an hour before lunch on the NASA TV. And hopefully that goes well. That will be the first launch with a crew on board to the International Space Station on a Starliner spacecraft using an Atlas V rocket, which is very reliable. This will be the 100th launch of the Atlas V rocket over the years. And they put a lot of spacecraft for the military, for NASA, telescopes, all kinds of stuff up with the Atlas V rocket. And this will be the first time with a crew. They have flown also two Starliner missions on the Atlas V. And the first one they cut short. It was supposed to go to the space station. That was the first experimental Starliner mission. The second one was also experimental, again without a crew, and that one actually did make it to the International Space Station and docked for a few days, and then again returned to Earth. So hopefully that goes well. I got my fingers crossed for Friday, and that's the planned flight. The last one was scrubbed last week on the 5th. Sonny Wilmore and Butch Wilmore got into the spacecraft, ready to go. They did not close the hatch yet, and they realized that there was some kind of a chattering noise, and it could even be heard from the ground. And what it turned out to be was this oxygen relief valve on the second stage. The Atlas V has three stages, really. It's got, first stage is these two solid booster rockets that are attached to it. They'll eventually separate a minute and a half of flight, and then the main booster will continue on pushing the spacecraft to orbit. And that's the one that uses two Russian engines, two RS 180 engines. That will push that vehicle further up, and then that will eventually separate. And then the final stage is A-10. They've flown them hundreds of times, literally. They've just upgraded them over the years. But that's a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engine. And in this case, they're using two of those engines on that stage. Well, apparently, when they fill up the rocket, when they're getting in with propellant, and in this case, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. Liquid oxygen relief valve kept going on and off, which it's really designed to do. If there's a slight overpressure, it'll open up and vent it to the atmosphere. The oxygen valve was chattering, opening and closing real fast, and they estimated it was going around 40 cycles per second, which is fast, and they decided to scrub the launch, take a look at the problem. They thought, well, maybe we could, close it down, open it again, and see what happens. They could do that remotely. But they decided against flight, and they said, let's bring it back to the blockhouse, back to the launch complex 41, back to the maintenance facility, and we'll change out the valve. I haven't heard that they did that yet, but I haven't heard that the launch has been canceled. I'm assuming that it's been done or being done, and they should have the rocket back to the launch pad before Friday for a 1:16 p.m. launch. Any comments?
Now, they got five Atlas rockets on this one going for the one spaceship going up Friday.
It's called the Atlas V. It's not that it has five rockets. It's the fifth version of the Atlas rocket. You think back to the 60s, you actually had an Atlas rocket, launch John Glenn to orbit. Let's call that you know, Atlas 1, and then they had a version as the used one by 2, I think they skipped 3, and then they, you know, they scrapped the design halfway through it, and then they went with the Atlas 4, which was popular for, you know, 10, 15 years, whatever it was, and then now they've gone up to the Atlas 5. Since 2005 they started that, and that's flown now. This will be the 100th mission. So it's just the name, you know. If you read it, it says Atlas B, you know, or Atlas 5, B for Roman numeral 5. And, yeah, that's what that is. But there's actually, you know, they have an RS-180 engine attached to that, and that's built by the Russians. And we're getting away from all the Russian engines. And that's one of the reasons they're eventually going to do away with the Atlas V very shortly. You know, they've got a few more missions left. And in the not-too-distant future, once they have the Vulcan rocket up and running, and there'll be American engines, which, like I said before, flew successfully at the end of the year last year. You know, any manned flights will eventually, if they keep flying Starliner, will be launched on a Vulcan rocket. Back to you, Chuck.
Okay, thanks for clearing up the 5 Atlas rockets.
Yeah, it's just a name, just like the Ariane 6 rocket that's going to be launched for the first time in French Guiana in South America. It comes out of Kourou Launch Complex. That's called the Ariane 6. Well, before that, recently retired Ariane 5. By the way, Ariane 5, one of the launches that launched on an Ariane 5 was the James Webb Space Telescope. NASA paid them to do that. They didn't pay them to do it. They did it on their own. That was part of their... That was their contribution to the system for the telescope, for the James Webb Space Telescope. Well, Ariane 5 was very successful. Large rocket, never launched people, but heavy lift rocket, similar to kind of thrust that the space shuttle used to have. Before that, they had the Ariane 3, and... so on. So it's just a number in some cases, like the Ariane 6. Now, you know, you have the Falcon 9, you know, and now you're talking about engines. And that's where it gets a little confusing. They actually have 9 Merlin C engines on the, or is it D engines now? Anyway, Merlin engines, 9 of them on the Falcon 9 rocket. And they designed the Falcon 5, but they did away with it. They skipped it. But there was a Falcon 1 when SpaceX started out, and it was just one engine that eventually was successful. Back to you, Charlie.
How about Australia? Are they doing anything for putting stuff in space?
They had one launch back in the 70s. England paid to have a launch from Australia, and that was it. Now there's another one coming up. There's a private company that plans on launching eventually an orbital launch from Australia, but we'll talk about that once that comes around. Probably months or maybe 6 months away, I guess. I don't know. I'll have to check. But there is a future flight, and you know they always said that they had a great location. There is one on this in the southern hemisphere that launches on a regular basis, and that's the Electron rocket by a company called Rocket Lab. And they launch out of the North Island of New Zealand, run by Peter Beck. Peter Beck owns that Rocket Lab company. Originally from, he's actually from New Zealand, but he he manufactures the rockets in the United States and California, which he does successfully. I think they've gotten at least 40 different launches that they've done from New Zealand. They have three launch pads, two in New Zealand, and another one here in the United States in Virginia. Wallops Island, Virginia, Charlie. Back to you.
So New Zealand's doing pretty good. What are they doing? Building them here and shipping them there?
Yeah, Peter Beck builds the engines here. He builds Rutherford engines. And that is a much smaller rocket, but it's enough to get to orbit. And he's done a couple of good, exciting missions as well. But yeah, they build them in California. And I guess they must ship them over to New Zealand for launch. Two launch complexes there he built. One in Virginia. He's launched, I think, as far as I know, two launches so far from Virginia. Most of them are being launched out of New Zealand. But he's pretty good. He's also building a new rocket. See, now the Electron rocket, of course, has nothing to do with electrons. Most of your rockets run on, they have turbo pumps to pump fuel into the engine compartments. And you have, they have to spin up. There's different ways of doing that. Most of the time they have like little small rocket engines powering these, the turbines that are spinning or part of the rocket system. As the fluids flow through, it spins up these turbines to tens of thousands of RPMs. And Peter Beck from Rocket Lab had a different idea. Instead of using that system, he says, why not use electric motors with batteries? So he's got these 50 horsepower motors, electric motors, attached to each rocket engine. Now, on the Electron rocket, he's got 9 rockets. He calls them Rutherford engines. They're Rutherford engines. Each one is it's only 5,000, 6,000 pounds each thrust. But he runs them on batteries, and he runs electric motors, and that's how he spins up the fuel, and it keeps everything a lot lighter, simpler to do, less piping involved, less plumbing parts, and again, he's launched a lot of missions. One particular mission he launched was one that is what's called Capstone, and right now it's orbiting the moon, and it's in a halo orbit for NASA. He did this. NASA paid him to put that rock up there. They wanted to see how stable this future orbit is going to be, and it worked out where it's very stable. So NASA plans on eventually putting a space station in that same orbit, but somebody had to get out there first. They used Rocket Lab, the Electron rocket, to do that. Now, what I was going to say before, this guy Peter Beck is also building another rocket, a larger rocket, one that's completely reusable. And he gave it another name, not the Electron rocket. He's calling it the Neutron rocket. Nothing to do with neutrons, but it's a cool name. And they plan on launching all of those out of Wallops Island, Virginia. Once that is completely developed, a rocket that could launch from there, go to space, and be completely reusable. That should be interesting. A lot of things going on. There's so many different rocket companies. Relativity, they're involved with a reusable rocket system. There's a couple of the other ones. After a while, I think I said this before, I don't think I'm going to be able to keep up with all the different companies and launches that are out there. But we'll try. Back to you, John.
Yeah, it is getting confusing with all these companies. With the Australian people, I mean the people from New Zealand, Are they putting up satellites also?
Well, yeah, he's launching for, you know, paying customers. And he's doing a lot of satellites, surveillance type of satellites. Planet Labs comes to mind as one company. And he'll put a couple of satellites on board every now and then and launch more of them. And that's a company that they have, you know, cameras looking down to taking pictures of the Earth. And in turn, they're selling those pictures, I guess, to, you know, people that need it. You know, they want to, you know, check out the oceans or the, you know, the land or, you know, I've heard that it's good agriculture. They know, you know, what area is dry, what area isn't, how much, you know. There's a purpose for all this stuff, I guess. He's putting up satellites. He's put up, like I said, 40 different launches, you know. Every one of those has had, you know, at least one satellite on board for one reason or another. Some of them are SAR missions, which are, you know, radar missions. Quite a few of them. Back to you, Charlie. WS1.
Okay, now these cameras that they're putting in space, how accurate are they from space? What can they see?
Yeah, I guess it depends on, you know, which company we're talking about. I haven't looked that far into it. You know, some of them are concentrating on the waters, some of them concentrating on the land. But that, you know, who knows whether, you know, how many satellites, I don't even know how many are up there. You know, you have one launch and he'll launch 2, 3, 4 satellites, you know, for one company. And you do that half a dozen times, next thing you know, you have 18, 20 satellites. But I don't know what the optics are and, you know, how well they could see. But, you know, we always had government satellites doing this. And this kind of like either supplements it. It doesn't replace it, I'm sure. But it definitely supplements it. You know, if you were, you know, a farmer doing thousands of acres of land and you wanted to know, you know how the climate is in your particular area, maybe these photographs or data would help. So it must be profitable for Planet Labs to be doing this. But I don't know any of the technical optics capabilities of these things. I see pictures of them. They look quite good, of course. Back to you, John.
Okay, I was just curious to see what the strength of these cameras were. You know, that they can't follow you around with one of these cameras.
Yeah, I hope not. But, National Reconnaissance Office, they have satellites, you know, spy satellites. And from what I understand, you could see easily a card table on Earth, you know, from these things. But then, you know, that's all government. I've never, of course, seen the picture, so I can't confirm that. That's what they say. At least one of them is as big as the Hubble Space Telescope. It's got a big mirror like that. Hubble Space Telescope, you know, naturally points out to the stars and looking at planets and stars and galaxies. Suppose you take that Hubble telescope with its 8-foot diameter mirror and point it down. You know, what are you going to see? I'm sure our government is very well aware of, you know, what's going on in these different countries. They do have that. In fact, the National Reconnaissance Office built two of these things two satellites. And I don't know if it was because of redundancy in case one didn't work, or they just didn't need another one, but there was another one just sitting on the ground. So you had the Hubble, you had a spy satellite up there, and you had this third one sitting there. So as time went on, NASA decided to, you know, hey, can we have that? And they said, yeah. So NASA's taking it, hasn't launched yet, but it's going to be the, what's the name of that thing? I think it's going to be the Roman telescope, which is going to be put into orbit, Earth orbit, and it's going to be able to look out, and the resolution is going to be the same as what Hubble sees, but they have a different, I guess, the ability, I'm trying to think in the optic world what they call it, but a wider field of view, that's what it would be. So the wider field of view is 100 times more than what Hubble sees. But the clarity, the resolution of this Roman space telescope is going to be the same as Hubble. So my guess, it'll be able to do, you know, cover 100 times more area that the Hubble could do. So, you know, rather than, you know, let this thing sit on Earth, they took it and redeveloped it. I guess I could look to see when the planned launch of that would be, but, you know, it's one of the things that they did. You know, waste not, want not. Back to you, Charlie WS.
I'll research that for next week, the Roman telescope, and when they're going to launch it, all right?
Yeah, sounds good. I know it's under development, and should be good. Okay, anybody else with any comments or questions? Put in that WS2N. Okay, I just want to mention this one fellow, Dick Rattan. Dick Rattan was a pilot, but he was also a ham. KB6 LQS. And, you know, this came across on the ARRL newsletter. You know, they have a bunch of topics, and one of them was about this fellow. And it became a silent key. But he was one of the pilots that flew on the Voyager airplane. And you might remember that. I think you should look up. It was the early 1980s, maybe 84 or something like that. Him and another woman, pilot, they went up together, loaded this plane up with fuel. That's two propellers on it. And they took off from California. The idea was to fly all the way around the Earth in Voyager and come all the way back and land again without stopping anywhere. And that's what they did. It took them over 9 days to do it. And, you know, I mean, it was a propeller plane. They weren't going like a jet, you know. They were going hundreds of miles an hour, not thousands, you know, not 600 or 700. So it took them 9 days to go all the way around the Earth. And they didn't fly high. They said around 11,000 feet or so. But, you know, it was quite an achievement. You guys probably remember that being in the news. It was called the Voyager. And I believe the Voyager spacecraft is now, or not spacecraft, the airplane is now in Smithsonian. That was a pretty cool accomplishment by this guy, Gary Rutan. And his brother, Bert Rutan, is the one that designed the airplane, and Dick flew it. So I'm not sure of his age. I think he was in his 80s. But I did find on another website that he did die from COVID. Well, long-term COVID. I wasn't even sure if that's a thing. Well, Dr. Roy could confirm that. But how could you have COVID for months and not maybe years? You know, I've heard that before, but Actually, this is the first case I've actually heard where somebody supposedly has had it and then passed away from it. That's a heck of a thing. Anyway, he's a bit of a hero anyway for making that kind of a flight. You know, fueled it up. I mean, they said that the wings could barely get off the ground. They had these long wings, and they were almost touching the ground when they took off. Any comments?
I just looked up the Nancy Grace Roman Telescope. Is set to be launched in 2027.
Okay, yeah, we got a couple of years. But, that's fully funded from what I heard, so that's not going to be one of these things that are going to be put on the back burner. So, yeah, good, thanks for that. Very well done. Yeah, Nancy Grace Roman was, you'll see it on the thing. He was famous for observations and things like that, so they credited her name to the, for this telescope. Thanks for that, Charlie. Any other topics?
Yeah, it's set to study dark matter and dark energy. Well, I have no clue what that is.
Okay. Well, yeah. I guess I think a lot of telescopes are doing that. I think that can't be its only purpose, but. Supposed to have a very wide field of view. So, we'll see. We'll follow that in a couple of years. God willing, I'm still here. Any other comments?
Yeah, I think the thing is, nobody has an idea of what dark energy and dark matter is, but you'd be 2BX, so.
Yeah, I agree, Frank. Yeah. Whoever figures that out gets the Nobel Prize. Dark energy and dark matter. All we know about it is what? I think it's 23% of the mass that's supposed to be in the universe is supposed to be dark matter, and another 70% or something is supposed to be the dark energy. And then there's only a few percent left, and that's, the planets, the stars. And I guess us, Frank, back to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I wasn't sure if you were turning it back to me. I know there seems to be a lot of dispute over just what dark matter is and what dark energy is. And I think some astrophysicists argue that they do not actually exist, which, of course, begs the question, if this is something that might not actually exist, why are we spending billions of dollars to put up a space telescope to look at it? But anyway, that's what little I know about it. But there's a reason we have no, you look it up and have no idea what it is, because nobody has the answer to that. Anyway, be listening for a few more minutes. WB2BX.
Okay, very good, Frank. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that information.
Now time complete.
Yeah. It's going to be, I think, a very long time before somebody figures it out. And then, somebody's going to say, I have the answer, and they're going to say, well, wait a minute. Let's think about this for a while. We'll see. They know something's weird because, they look at the stars going around galaxies, and they don't revolve around the galaxies the way they're supposed to. Based on the distance from the center of the galaxies to where they are, they're supposed to be moving at a certain pace. Well, that pace is not right. The further you go out, it's not what it's supposed to be when you do the math. So they figure there's something else pulling these things along. And let's call it dark matter. And then as the years went by, other researchers looked at the standard, they call it the standard candle, the different ways to judge how far not only, you know, planets are from one another, but how far are stars from one another, how far are galaxies from one another. And they came out with the 1A supernova system, knowing how bright one of those supernovas go off. And if they look at it, they look at the light it gives off, and they can figure out from the light, you know, okay, now we know how far that galaxy is. That one, and then they put this all through our computers, and they realize these things are going away, not only from each other, they're accelerating. Okay, what's causing that? Let's call that dark energy. So that's what we know about dark energy and dark matter. All right, we're getting to the wishing hour here, so I'm going to turn this back to Roy. And thank everybody that listened to us, asked questions and all. We'll try to be back again next week as well. I'll say 73. Tomorrow night, of course, is the Limark Info Club Net. We'll try to make that as well. That always comes out at 8:30. Not like this net. This net comes out at 8, but 8:30, followed by Swap and Shop, and then followed by Newsline. 73 for now. WS2N. Back over to you, Roy. AC2GS.
AC2GS, thank you very much, Paul. Thank you for the SpaceNet report. Thank you for all that you do here on the technical net and all that you do for the club. You all appreciate it, and I especially appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone else's participation tonight. Just to tie up some little loose ends, long COVID is a thing. Some people during their infection develop secondary inflammatory processes. People have had problems breathing. They've had heart problems. There's a lot of organ damage that took place with some people that's designated as long COVID. So it's a thing, and people are still suffering and probably will be suffering in one way or the other for many years to come, unfortunately. And as you mentioned before, yeah, dark matter is about 27%, and it's a theory of why heavenly bodies act like they have more mass. So either there's something that we can't see, that we can't calculate, that has mass, or our understanding of gravity is wrong. And dark energy is 68%, and that's the explanation of why the universe is accelerating its expansion. Some energy, they posit, has to be doing it, and either of those will win you a Nobel Prize, by the way. You don't have to do both, so there's that. Anyway, our revels now are done. As Dick often ended his TechNet, be kind to each other, and I'll add good old Epictetus's line about it's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. So keep your mind open and learn something new every day. And as I am given to closing my technical net, this is AC2GS clear. Slava, Ukraine.
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Uniform. I'll see you next week.